Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama daf Kuf Ches. We are holding at the bottom of Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom, Bai Rami Bar Chama. And the Gemara today on Amud Aleph is basically going to discuss various cases of paying kefel, paying the double payment for Gneva, and paying Chomesh, paying a fifth extra, which you would pay either for Gneva for a theft or for Aveda for a lost object. And whether you could be obligated to pay kefel twice, whether you could be obligated to pay chomesh twice, etc. And then the Gemara in Amud Beis is going to speak about various cases of deposits and whether you're a shomer chinam, whether you're a shomer sachar, and what exactly you'd have to pay for that. So let's start. Bayi Rami Bar Chama, Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. Bayi Rami Bar Chama, Mamon hamechayvo kefel potro mina chomesh, odoma shvua hamechaveso kefel potarto mina chomesh. Rami Bar Chama's question is, we know that in certain instances, you're going to be obligated to pay kefel, and you're not going to be obligated to pay a chomesh. But in some instances, you have kefel, and you have a shvua, both. And the question is, which of those requirements is what exempts you from having to pay chomesh? Is it the fact that you have to pay kefel, which therefore means you will no longer have to pay chomesh? Or is it the fact that you made a shvua, obligating yourself, that then exempts you from having to pay a chomesh? And Gemara says, Heichidami, what exactly is the case? Rashi fills in for us here, Beheichidami, Kalomar Lamai Nafkamina. What's the practical difference between whether it's the kefel that you pay that exempts you from paying a chomesh, or the shvua that you make that exempts you from paying the chomesh? We'd have to find a case where you have maybe one of these factors without the other, and we could figure out if you're still obligated in chomesh, it must be that it's the other factor, which is lacking in whatever case we come up with, that exempts you from having to pay the chomesh, and that's why in this case that we'll come up with, where you don't have that factor, you'd be obligated to pay a chomesh. So says the Gemara, Hechi Dami, what's the case exactly? Kigon Shetan Tainas Gana Vinishba, Bechazar Vetan Tainas Avad Vinishba. Let's say a person first claims that the object that he was supposed to be watching was stolen from him, and he makes an oath about that. And then he goes back and claims that the object was merely lost, not stolen, and he makes a shvu on that. Uvo Eidim Akamaisa, and then Eidim come and testify about the object being stolen, vehoda abatraisa, and then the person himself is moda, he concedes about the property having been lost. So we have Adim requiring about the first claim that he made, namely that the object was stolen, and that would require him in kefel. But then he has a hoda, which the Gemara is sort of assuming is the shvua here, the oath that he would be making, admitting to what happened. That really goes on the Aveda, on the fact that the object was lost, but not that the fact, not on the fact that the object was stolen. So therefore, the Gemara clarifies mine.
Why do we allow him to do a second shvua that contradicts his first shvua?
I think the assumption is that he didn't make a shvua the first time. I guess, right, in the beginning, we're just saying that he's being towing, that he's claiming it, but he's not testifying about it. Oh, I see, Vinishba. He did make an oath. So if you look in Tosvos, on the bottom of Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, he addresses this question. He basically says a few lines into the Tosvos, Dibur Machil Kegon, he says, V'hachi Perusho, this is the explanation of the Gemara. When the Gemara says that he first makes a Shvua about Gneva, and then he goes back and makes a Shvua about Aveda, V'hachi Perusho, V'chazar V'tan Tainas Avad, V'omer Mashen Ishbati Shenignav, Lo Ki Ela Avad, V'hayalili Shava She'avad. What he's doing when he makes this oath that the object was stolen is he's really retracting what he said that it was, that it was lost. He's retracting what he said that it was stolen. And he's saying, I was really incorrect when I made an oath that it was stolen. I meant to say that it was lost, and that's what I should have said. So I guess because he's being chozer, he's really retracting that statement and making a new oath. That's why we would allow it. But according to Tosfos, it sounds like absent that, absent a complete admission that his first oath was incorrect, we wouldn't accept the second oath. Right? And Tosfos says, Aval ein lefarish amar achar shvua avad, shim kein lo havi matzi lemiftar nafshe be'avad, kevan shehi bershuso b'shah shenishba. You can't say that he's later just going back and making a new oath saying that the object was lost, because like Rudy's pointing out, then we wouldn't accept such an oath. So the assumption is that he's fully retracting the first oath that he made that the object was stolen. So the Gemara wants to know now, my, in this case where you have Adim testifying about the object being lost, being stolen, rather, and then you have the person conceding about the object being lost, what's the din? Does he have to pay chomesh or not? Do we say, Mamon hamechavaso kefel, potro mina chomesh, v'chayev le'ilove kfela? Do we say that the money that obligates him in kefel is the money that exempts him from having to pay a chomesh? And in this case, since Edim came about the fact that the object was stolen, he's obligated to pay kefel, and thus he wouldn't have to pay a chomesh. Odil mashvua hamechavaso kefel potarta min a chomesh, v'hashvua batraisa, ho'o delo kamechai v'leik feila, t'chai v'chomsha. Or do we say that it's the shvua that obligates him to pay kefel, which thereby exempts him from having to pay a chomesh? And in this second shvua that he's making, the shvua about the object being lost, he never would have had to pay kefel. And so since this shvua is not obligating him in kefel, maybe he's still obligated to pay a chomesh. That's the creative case that the Gemara comes up with, where there's going to be a nafka mina, where there's going to be a practical difference or ramification to this question, whether it's the kefel that exempts him from a chomesh, or it's the oath that exempts him from a chomesh. So that's a standing question. So Amar Rava, says Rava, Tashima, let's try to bring a proof to answer this question. Amar le'echad min ashuk, heichan shori sheganavta. If a person says to somebody in the marketplace, just a general person in the town, where is my ox that you stole? V'hu omer lo ganavti. And the person responds and said, I never stole your ox. Mashbiecha ani v'amar amen. So the person who's claiming that his ox was stolen says, I'm requiring you to make an oath to me. And the person who had this claim posed against him responds in the positive to that shvua and says, I can make an oath that I didn't steal your ox. If witnesses testify that this person did steal the ox, then the person would be obligated to pay kefel. And if the person admits on his own right that he stole this ox, he would have to pay Karen v'chomesh v'asham, he'd have to pay the principal, he'd have to add a fifth, and he'd have to bring a korban asham, but he would not be obligated to pay kefel because he conceded on his own right. So says the Gemara, we can infer from this case. How so? V'ha'acha edim hu d'mechai v'leik feila. In this case, the witnesses are testifying that he stole the ox, and that's what's obligating him to pay kefel. And nonetheless, the Braisa taught that hoda me'atzmo in, that if he's moda on his own right, without the edim, he'd have to pay keren v'chomesh v'asham, he'd have to pay the principal and an extra fifth, and he'd have to bring a korban. Aval hoda achar edim, lo. But if he conceded after the edim already testified about him having stolen the ox, then he would not have to pay keren v'chomesh v'asham. And the Gemara says, we can infer from that, v'yisal kadaitach shvua hamechavaso kefel potarto mina chomesh, amai hoda achar edim, lo. If you assume that the shvua which obligates him in kefel is what exempts him from a chomesh, why is it that if he's moda after the edim come, that he would not be obligated to pay keren v'chomesh v'asham? Michti, hashvua lo kamechayve lekfela, techayve chomsha. The oath that this person would be making after the Edom already testified that he stole the ox would not be mechayev him kefel, would not obligate him to pay the double payment, because the Edom already came and they required him to pay the double payment. And if we assume that it's the very oath that obligates him in kefel, which exempts him from a chomesh, then in this case where the oath is not exempting him, is not obligating him in kefela, he should be obligated to pay chomesh. Yet the Gemara said that only hoda me'atzma, only if he concedes on his own would he have to pay keren v'chomesh v'asham, but if he concedes on his own after the edim already came, he would not have to pay a chomesh. So elalav shma mina, mamon hamechayvo kefel potarta mina chomesh, shma mina. Can't we infer from this case that it's the money that obligates him to pay kefel, which exempts him from the chomesh, not the shvua? And the Gemara says, yes, we can in fact infer that. So shma mina to this question, is it the money, the kefel, that exempts him from the chomesh, or is it the oath? We see clearly that it's the kefel which exempts him from the chomesh. So that's the first question that the Gemara poses, and the Gemara resolves in that way. Now, boy Ravina, chomesh ukfela betray gavri mai. Asks Ravina, could you ever have a case where chomesh and kefel are both paid, even though generally we would assume that would not be possible, if you have two different people each paying one of the payments? If one person is paying chomesh and one person would be paying kefel, is that a possibility? Or do we assume chomesh and kefel are inextricably linked? If one of them is paid, the other is not, even if it would be split across two people. So says the Gemara again, Heichidami, what exactly would be the case where one person might pay Chomesh and one person might pay Kefel? Kegon Shemasar Shoro Lishnei Bnei Adam, Metanu Bo Tanas Ganav. Let's say a person gave his ox to two people to watch, and they claim that it was stolen from them. And Chad Nishba Behoda, Vechad Nishba Uvo Edim. One of them first made an oath that the ox was stolen, and then he conceded and said, no, really it wasn't, really I stole it, really I still have it. And the other person made an oath that it was stolen, and then Adam came and testified that it wasn't stolen, that really he had stolen it. So my, what do we say about this case? Could we obligate one person in Kefel and one person in Chomesh? Mi amrinan bechad gabra kapi rachmana delo mishalim chomsha ukvela. Do we say that the Torah was only concerned, Hashem was only concerned that one person not pay Chomesh and Kfela, but, and the Bach adds in here a couple words, about betray Gavri, if you have two people, Hai Nishalim Kfela, Behai Nishalim Chomsha, the one who has Edim coming to testify that he stole the object should have to pay Kfel, and the one who conceded on his own that he was the one who stole the ox should have to pay the Chomesh. Odilma ilavechad mamona kapi rachmana delo nishalim alachom shauk feila v'hachanami echad mamonehu. Or do we say that the Torah was concerned, Hashem was concerned, that on one principle, on one object, on one thing of monetary value, a person or people should never pay both a chomesh and kefel? And in this instance, we're dealing with only one ox, and thus we shouldn't obligate one of the people in Kefel, the person who had Adim come about his claim, and one of the people in Chomesh, the person who conceded on his own. So how do we address this question? And says the Gemara Teiku, that Tichbi Atari, it's Kushiyot Vibayo, we have to leave this question around for Eliyahu Hanavi, because we cannot answer this question conclusively. So the second question of the Gemara, whether you could pay Kefel and Chomesh with two different people on the same principle, remains unresolved.
So each person is only responsible for half the payment?
Meaning whichever payment we obligate them in, whether Kefel or Chomesh, but not both, they would split that?
Yeah,
I think that would be correct. I guess there is a possibility that we would just obligate them in whichever one happens first, and then whichever party is responsible for that would be obligated to pay the whole payment, and the other person would get off the hook. But I would think more nearly that they're going to split the payment, like you're suggesting. Yeah, that's what I would think. Okay, so that's the second bayi of the Gemara. Now we have another bayi. Bayi Rav Papa. Rav Papa poses a question. Trei chomshi o trei kfeili b'chad gavra mai. So we've established that you're not going to pay kefel and chomesh together. And it's also unclear if two people could play. Well, I guess also, Rudy, your question, you're saying before Eliyahu Hanavi comes to answer it.
Yeah.
So I think that would be correct. But then after Eliyahu Hanavi comes, we'd hopefully have a resolution. So now this question relates also. Rav Papa wants to know if you have two. We've established that one person cannot pay both Kefel and Chomesh. And it's a question whether one person could pay Kefel and the other person pay Chomesh. But now we want to know, can a single person pay two rounds of Chomesh or two rounds of Kefel? Hey Chidami, ask Gemara, what's the case where this would arise? Kegon shetan tainas avod v'nishba v'hoda, v'chazar betan tainas avod v'nishba v'hoda. Let's say the person claims that the object was stolen from him. He makes an oath about it, and then he concedes. And then he goes back and again claims that the object was lost. And he makes an oath. And then he admits again. Inami kegon shetan tainas gana v'nishba uvo edim. V'chazer v'tan tainas gana v'nishba uvo edim. Alternatively, let's say the person's claims are always about theft. That he first claims the object was stolen. And he makes an oath. And edim come and testify that really he stole it. And then he goes back and repeats those same claims. That the object was stolen, makes an oath. And then Adam come. So my mi amrin and trei gavni mamona kamar rachman ed lo nishdamu ilav echa mamona v'hacha chad gavnehu. Do we say that Hashem, the Torah's peda, the Torah's particularity, what the Torah wanted to avoid, was that two different types of mamon, kefel and chomesh, be paid on one set of principle? And here we're dealing with only one type of payment. We're either dealing with two sets of chomesh in the case of tainas avad, or we're dealing with two sets of kefel in the case of tainas ganav. So maybe the Torah was only concerned that a person not pay two different types of payment on one principle, but here where we'd have only one type of payment, just it would be paid twice, maybe the Torah is okay with that. Odilma trei mamona marachmana nishdamu ilav echa mamona v'hachanami trei mamona ninhu. Or do we say that the Torah didn't care whether it was two types of payment? The Torah just cared that it was two sets of payment. And therefore, it doesn't matter if it's kefil and chomesh, or it's two rounds of kefil or two rounds of chomesh. Neither one is going to be possible. The Torah is not going to allow you to pay double, to pay two sets on one set of principle. So the Gemara wants to know what the answer is to that question. And says Gemara, Tashema, Da'amar Rava. We can infer from the following braisa, because Rava says, Bachamishi so Yosef alav, HaTorah ribta chamishi yoshar be'lekaren achas shmamina. Rava quotes the pasuk which says, "Vachamishi to Yosef alav," that you have to add on a chomesh to your payment. And the Gemara assumes throughout that that can include even multiple payments of chomesh. That if you, as long as the principal remains worth a shavet pruta, then the chomesh that you add on could be added on multiple times, and you could have to pay chomesh more than once. So Shema Mina, the Torah isn't careful, or isn't particular that a person not pay two sets of payment for one principle. It's only that you not pay two different types of payment. So you could pay multiple chomeshim, and presumably you could also pay multiple kefels as well on the same principle. So that's now the third question that the Gemara answers, and this question, like the first question, was resolved. Now the Gemara continues with a machlokas Abaye and Rava. Tavu bailim l'shomer, v'nishba v'shileim, v'hukar haganav, kefil l'mi. Let's say the owner of the object, the owner who made the deposit, claims from the person watching it and asks for the object back and says, give me my object back, I'm concerned that maybe you stole it. And the person makes an oath that they're not responsible for the object, that it was stolen from them, or something that they would not be responsible for. But the shilem, after making this oath, they still pay the owner. And Rashi says here, "Ba'achar kach shilem lifnim mishmur sadin," that they went beyond the letter of the law. They paid, even though technically the shvuah that they made, the oath that they made, would exempt them from payment, and they'd be off the hook. And then, after making the oath and after paying, v'hukar haganav, the thief was identified, and we now know who the person was who stole the object. So kefel ami. To whom should the kefel payment be paid? Should the ganav, should the person who stole this object have to pay it to the bailim, to the owner of the object, because after all, they were the original owner? Or do we say that when the shomer technically got off the hook with his shvuah, and nonetheless he went back and he paid beyond the letter of the law, maybe then he becomes the rightful owner of this object, and the ganav should have to pay kefel to him? So Abaye amar le bal hapikadon. Abaye says the payment should go to the original owner, and Rava amar le misha hapikadon etzlo. Rava says the payment should go to the person who was watching the object, who then paid for it and became the owner. Abaye amar le bal hapikadon. Abaye says it should go to the original owner. Kevan de atreche b'shvua lo makni lekfela. Since the shomer sort of annoyed or bothered, burdened the owner to have to deal with the shvua and come to Beis Din, right? Rashi says, "Kevan da atrachei shomer lebailim, achaviyu lebeis din v'nishma." The guardian bothered, busied the owner until he had to come to Beis Din and deal with the shvua, and therefore the owner is not going to give over the object to the shomer, who sort of inconvenienced him and made him come to Beis Din. Rashi says, "Afal gav de hader shilem lo maknu le bailim le shomer kfeila b'shas tashlumen." Even though the shomer eventually pays and in theory should become the rightful owner, because of the burden of having to go to Beis Din, the owner is not going to give the rights to the object over to the shomer, and the shomer would not deserve the kefil payment. So that's the way Abaye sees it, and therefore the original owner should still get the kefil payment. But Rava amar le misha hapikadon etzlo. Rava says the shomer who was watching the object should get the kefel, because kevan deshilem makni lekfela. Since he paid for the object after he was already off the hook when he made the oath, then we assume the owner is granting the rights to the kefel payment to the guardian, and the shomer deserves to receive the kefel payment. The machlokas Abaye and Rava is really a machlokas, is really a debate about the diuk, the exact logical inference that follows from the following Mishnah. The Tnan, because the Mishnah says, it's a Mishnah from Bava Metzia, that hamafkid etzel chavero behema ukelim. If a person deposits animals or utensils, vessels to his friend. V'nignivu osha avdu, and they were either stolen or lost. Shilem v'lo ratza lishava, if the guardian pays because he doesn't want to make an oath. Shari amru shomer chinam nishba biyotze, because we assume that a shomer chinam, an unpaid watchman, can just make an oath that something for which he's not responsible happened to the object and he is exempt. So if he pays instead of making an oath, then nimtza haganav, if later the thief is found, meshalem tashlumei kefel, the thief would have to pay a double payment. And tavachu machar meshalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha, if you're dealing either with an ox or with a sheep, if the thief either shechs the animal or sells the animal, he would have to pay 4 or 5 times payment. And the miyu meshalem, to whom does he pay? Lemisha pikadon etzlo, to the shomer, to the person who's watching the object, not to the original owner. That's what happens, according to the Mishnah, if the shomer chinam pays for the object instead of making an oath. But nishba b'lo ratza l'shalem, if the guardian makes an oath instead of paying, v'nimtza aganav, and then the thief is found, meshalem tashlumei kefel, he should have to pay double payment. Tavach u'machar meshalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha, if he either shechs it or sells the animal, assuming it's one of the animals that would be subject to those dinim, he would have to pay 4 or 5 times. And the miyu meshalem l'baal ha'pikadon, to whom would he pay? He would pay to the original owner. So it sounds like the Reisha, the beginning of the Mishnah, which says that you paid and you didn't make an oath, there the payment would go to the person watching the object, and that would be like Rava. And in the second case, in the Seifa of the Mishnah, if the person made an oath and didn't pay, then the payments would be made to the original owner, and that would be like Abaye. So based on these two cases, Abaye and Rava are going to try to make an inference to support their claim. Abaye daik mi Reisha, and Rava daik mi Seifa. Even though the beginning of the Mishnah seemed to be like Rava, Abaye is actually going to infer from there that his position would be correct. And even though the end of the Mishnah, the Seifa, seemed to be like Abaye, Rava is actually going to infer from the Seifa that his position would be correct. So Abaye daik mereisha, Abaye focuses clearly on and carefully on the beginning of the Mishnah. Diktani shilem v'lo ratza lishava, because the beginning of the Mishnah said that if the shomer chinam, if the unpaid watchman paid for the object and he didn't want to make an oath about it, then the payment would be made to him. And so infers Abaye, who says the payment should be made to the original owner, time of the lo ratza lishava, in the beginning of the Mishnah, the only reason the payment goes to the shomer chinam is because he didn't want to make an oath and he paid. Hanishba, but if he does make an oath, afal pi shashilem, even though he later goes and pays, like the case that Abaye and Rava are debating, then the mi mishalem lebal hapikadon, to whom would you have to pay if you first made the oath and then you paid? You would have to pay to the original owner. And thus Abaye thinks that the beginning of the Mishnah, which says if you pay, the payment goes to you, actually supports his position, because it shows clearly that if you pay after making the oath, then the payment would go to the original owner. And Rava daik mi seifa, Rava is going to bring a proof to his position from the end of the Mishnah. Diktani, the Bach adds in, because the end of the Mishnah teaches that nishba v'lo ratza l'shalem, if you made an oath because you didn't want to pay. And the Mishnah had said that if you make an oath because you don't want to pay, then the payment goes to the original owner, like Abaye. But Rava can infer from that case that time of the lo ratza l'shalem, it's only because you made an oath and you didn't want to pay that the payment would go to the original owner. Hashilem, but if you do pay, afal pi shenishba, even though you already made the oath, lemi mishalem, lemi shapikadon etzlo. If you pay after already making an oath, to whom would the payment go? Then the payment would go to the guardian. So that actually supports Rava. He can infer from the case of the Mishnah, where you just made an oath and didn't pay, that in the case that he and Abaye are arguing over, where you first make the oath and then you pay, the payment would go to the person watching the object, not to the original owner, and thus that supports Rava. So Abaye and Rava have this debate, and they really each can bring proofs to their position from the two different cases in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, well, that's very great that they can support their positions from the different parts of the Mishnah, but that means that the opposite part of the Mishnah is going to pose a question to them. L'Abaye kasha seifa, according to Abaye, the seifa of the Mishnah is going to be a question, because Abaye brought a support to his position from the beginning of the Mishnah. Rava brought a support to his position from the end of the Mishnah, and that means that the end of the Mishnah is a question on Abaye. So Amar Lecha Abaye, Abaye would tell you, here's how I'm going to read the end of the Mishnah. Again, let's just remind ourselves, the end of the Mishnah, which said that if you make an oath and don't pay, the payment goes to the original owner. So Abaye says, Hachi katani. What did the Mishnah really mean to say? That nishba below ratza l'shalem kodem ha-shvua ela l'achar ha-shvua. If you make an oath and you didn't want to pay before the shvua, but you later decided after making the oath that you're still going to pay, then l'mi mishalem l'bal ha-pikadon. To whom would the thief have to pay the payments of kefel or arba v'chamisha? They would have to pay them to the original owner. And that's exactly like Abaye, in a case where an oath was made and then payment was made, you would still have to pay the original owner. And thus the Seifa, the end of the Mishnah, does not pose a question to Abaye. And the Rav Akashi Reisha, the Gemara is assuming that the beginning of the Mishnah poses a question to Rava, because the beginning of the Mishnah was a support for Abaye, and Rava brought a support to his position from the end of the Mishnah. So let's just remind ourselves, what did the Reisha of the Mishnah say? The Reisha of the Mishnah said, if you first pay because you don't want to make an oath, then when the thief has to pay, he'll pay the owner, the guardian, the person watching the object, not the original owner. So how is Rava going to read that? Because you can infer from there against Rava. So Amar lecha Rava, hachi katani. This is what the Mishnah means to say, that shilem velo ratza lamod b'shvuaso ela shilem. If you paid because you didn't want to maintain, to stick with the original shvua that you made, so you went ahead and you paid even after making the shvua, then lemi mishalem, lemi shehapikadon etzlo. To whom would you pay in such a case? To whom would the thief pay in such a case? He would pay the person watching the object. And thus, the beginning of the Mishnah also emerges like Rava, even in a case where an oath is made and then payment is made after the fact, the thief would have to pay the payments to the person watching the object, not to the owner, and that's like Rava, not like Abaye. So it works out perfectly. Abaye and Rava are both able to bring supports to their position from the Mishnah, and they're also able to understand the opposite clause in the Mishnah in a way that's consistent with their position, and thus this is really a sound machlokas amarayim, Abaye and Rava, based on this Mishnah. Now says the Gemara further, Tavu bailim l'shomer v'nishba v'hukar haganav. Let's say the bailim claim that something happened to their object while the person was watching it, and the guardian makes an oath, and then hukar haganav, and then the thief is found. Now tavo shomer vehoda. Let's say the shomer approaches the thief, and he tries to claim that you stole the object, and the thief concedes, the thief admits that he was the one who stole it. But then tavu bailim, then the original owner makes a claim from the thief, vekafar, and the thief refutes that claim. He doesn't concede to the bailim, he only admits to the shomer. Ve'aviu edim, and then the shomer and the bailim, who now are on the same team, the guardian and the original owner, bring witnesses to testify against this thief. Mi niftar haganav be'oda shomer, o lo niftar haganav be'oda shomer. So since in this case the thief admitted to the guardian before he refuted the claim of the original owner, do we say that the fact that the thief conceded to the guardian exempts him from having to pay kefel because he already admitted to having stolen the object? Or do we say that the hodah, the concession that the thief made to the shomer, to the guardian, is not consequential, is not significant, and thus he's not exempt from paying kofar, from paying kefel to the kfira that he made against the bailim's claim? So that's a question. Amar Rava. Rava says it depends. Im be'emes nishba niftar hagana be'oda shomer. If the shomer, when he initially had a claim made against him by the owner of the object, and he swore, if that oath that the shomer made was in truth, was correct, was in good faith, then the ganav would be exempt from having to pay kefel to the bailim based on the concession, the admission that he makes to the shomer. Why is that? Because if the guardian makes a true oath to the bailim, that shows that really he's trustworthy, that the bailim really trusts him, and in some way he becomes like the owner of the object. And if he's the owner of the object, when the ganav admits to him that he stole it, that's considered a good, significant concession, and that's enough to exempt the ganav, to exempt the thief from having to pay kefel to the bailim. But im b'sheker nishba, if the shomer, when he initially made that oath to the bailim, lied about the oath and did not make a true oath, then lo niftar haganav ve'oda shomer. Then the thief will not be exempt from having to pay kefel to the bailim, because we assume that the owner did not really trust the shomer, the oath that he made was not really correct, and he doesn't become the owner over the object in any way, and thus the concession that the thief makes to the shomer is inconsequential. It's not enough to exempt him from having to pay kefel to the bailim. So that's how Rava would answer this question, whether the concession to the Shomer is good or not. Now, Bayu Rava. Rava says, I have a new question. Amad lishava b'sheker v'lo hinichuhu mahu. We just established that if the Shomer made a true oath to the owner, that would be enough to make the concession of the Ganav significant, and the Ganav would not have to pay kefel to the Bailim. But if he made an oath falsely, that oath would not be good, and the Ganav would have to pay kefel to the Bailim. So let's say the Shomer gets up, Lishava B'sheker, to make a false oath. He's going to make an oath that's not true, but then for whatever reason, he's dismissed, and he doesn't end up registering his oath in Beis Din. So would we say the fact that he stands up to make a false oath means that he's not a trustworthy guardian, he doesn't become the owner, and the Ganav would not be exempt from having to pay kefel by conceding to him? Or would we say, no, since he wasn't able to register this false claim, then he still is trustworthy, and the Ganav could get off the hook by conceding to the Shomer? And the Gemara leaves that question also, Biteku. We have to leave that over for Eliyahu HaNavi to answer that question. Now, Rav Kahana Matni Hachi. That was the way Rav Kahana taught the question of Rava. But Rav Tavyumi Masni, and the Bach adds in the word Hachi. Rav Tavyumi taught this question slightly differently. Bayu Rava. Rava posed the question as follows. Nishba l'sheker mahu. Let's say he actually did testify falsely. He did make an oath falsely. Then what would be the din? And the Gemara leaves that over b'teku. So the assumption seems to be that in Rav Kahana's version, he taught an unequivocal statement of Rava that if he swears truly, then the concession of the Ganav is significant. But if he swears falsely, then the concession of the Ganav is not significant. And Rava just wants to know whether a person stands up to make a false oath but doesn't actually register that oath, then what would be the question? But in Rav Tavyumi's version of the question, he's asking about a person who actually made an oath b'sheker, and that question remains standing, and thus Rava could never have said clearly, at least in Rav Tavyumi's version, that definitively if you make an oath falsely, that would mean the concession of the Ganav is not significant, because then there'd be nothing left for Rava to ask about when we say Nishba l'sheker. So it must be that in Rav Tavyumi's version, he didn't have the full version of Rava, where Rava said that if the Shomer made the oath falsely, that the Ganav's concession would be no good. So those are the two versions of Rava's question, based on what you taught in the name of Rava to begin with. Now, Tavu Bailim l'Shomer v'shilim v'hukar Ganav. Let's say the Bailim make a claim from the guardian, and the guardian pays for the object, and then the thief is later found. And Tavu Bailim Behoda, the Bailim make a claim from the Ganav, and he concedes, he admits to having stolen the object. And then Tavo Shomer Vikafar, then the guardian makes a claim from the thief, and the thief denies that claim. So it's the reverse of the case that we had before. Before, the thief was conceding to the guardian, now the thief is conceding only to the owner. The Havi Adim. And then the owner and the Shomer, who are now on the same team, bring Adim, bring witnesses who can testify that the thief stole the object. Then we want to know the opposite question. Niftar Ganav Beodas Bailim Olo. Do we say that the Ganav, the thief, gets off the hook for having to pay kefel to the Shomer, who he lied to, since he admitted, since he conceded to having stolen the object to the original owner? Mi Amrinan Matzi Amar Le Shomer Le Bailim. Do we say that the Shomer, the guardian, could tell the owner, Atun, Kevan de Shaklisu Lechudami, Istilikti Lechu Mehacha? Do we say that since the guardian paid the owner for the value of the property, and that, so to speak, removes the owners from the case, and therefore the concession that the thief makes to the owners will be inconsequential because the owners are completely removed from this case, and thus it will not exempt the thief from having to pay kefel to the Ganav? Odilma matzi amri le ki hechi da'at abata lan milta ananami avdin lecha. Or can the Bailim, can the owners respond to the Shomer and say, just like you did us a favor that you paid us for the object, even though presumably you wouldn't have had to have paid, and you paid just above, you know, beyond the letter of the law, then we also got involved on your behalf, and we were trying to deal with the Ganav for you. Ananami avdin lecha. We also are doing a favor for you. Tarchinan batar ganava. We're working to try to extract payment from the thief. And shakalna anan didan vishko at didach. And we got payment for the object from you. And now you should take your payment from the ganav. But in some ways, this would not be a favor to the shomer because it would exempt the ganav from having to pay kefel to the shomer. The ganav would now not have to pay double payment to the shomer since since he admitted to the Bialim. So that's an open question, whether or not the Shomer can just tell the Bialim, you completely removed yourselves from the case when I paid you, and thus the Hodah that the Ghana made to you is inconsequential, or no, perhaps the Bialim can say, we're still trying to help you, just like you helped us, and thus the concession that the Ghana made to the Bialim would be significant, and he'd be exempt from having to pay Kefel to the Shomer. And the Gemara says that is also Teku, Tishbi Yataretz Kutshu Bebaya. We have to leave that question open also for Eliyahu HaNavi.
Question. If the Ganav goes to Beis Din and is a moda for Beis Din, he's exempt from KFO. Right?
Yeah.
So Beis Din certainly is not a party to this.
So you're saying when he testifies, when he concedes to the owners after the owners receive payment, that should be no worse than to Beis Din.
We have the case where the guy wants to bring a robber to court.
Right.
And the robber runs to a different court and is moda in that different court. So he's patur from KFO. So that other court definitely is not a party to the transaction and yet exempts him from KFO. So why should this be any different?
Yeah. So my simple answer would be that, again, take it for what it's worth, I guess, but it could be that Beis Din is by definition like involved in every single case, right? Because they're a legal entity. So perhaps we can't compare parties who have been removed from the case and they're neither a party nor part of the legal system. Maybe to them a concession would be inconsequential, but to a Beis Din who, granted, like you're saying, is not a party, but simultaneously they're part of the legal system. So they sort of have jurisdiction over every case, even if it's a different Beis Din from the case where the case is being adjudicated. So maybe that's why that hodah, that concession is significant, that registers, because they're by definition part of the case. But when you have a party who's neither here nor there, they're not the legal system itself, they're not Beis Din, and they're also not the party involved in the case, then maybe that hodah would not be significant. Does that make sense?
I'm going to tell Trump not to bring any cases in front of you.
Ilan,
yeah.
I'm teasing.
Yeah.
Just a quick question.
Yeah, of course.
The Ganav's motivation in these most recent cases that we brought down is basically he wants to save money.
Yeah, I think so. Exactly. That by making this concession either to the Shomer first in the first case or to the Bialim, he would save himself from kefel.
Okay, so and then why would anybody believe the Ganav fault or anybody else if he's trying to get his way out of this situation? Why? What's the motivation of believing him and allowing him to pay less?
Well, I think the reality is that he did steal it, and we know that, and we have Aiden potentially coming to testify about that. So we do believe him when he concedes because it's consistent with the reality. The question is just whether his concession registers in a way that'll exempt him from kefel. But I guess that's the way the Torah sets up the payments, is that if you concede on your own, you'll exempt yourself from kefel. So, I mean, you could understand that the kefel, the double payment, is really just a penalty for not conceding. But when you're making this admission, it's consistent with all the facts on the ground. We lost the object. It's pretty clear that you stole it. We have Adam coming to testify. So we can believe your concession. I think that's why that would exempt him from kefel. And really, maybe the punishment then is only because he didn't admit.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Okay. So it says the Gemara further. Itmar, nignava be'ones behukar aganav. Let's say the object was stolen. Be'ones, meaning by force. Rashi says belistim mizuyin, that they were like armed robbers who came and stole the object. The shomer sachar paterbo. Even a paid watchman would be exempt from payment in such a case. And then the thief was found. And you have the ability to remove the object, remove the item from the thief's hands. So what happens in this case? Says Abaye, if the person is an unpaid watchman, then if he wants, he could deal with the thief and try to get the object back. Or he could just make an oath that the object was stolen by force and there's nothing he could have done about it. But if he's a paid watchman, Rashi basically explains that since you have the ability to remove the object from the person, from the thief, that's what we're assuming, then when you're a Shomer Sachar, even though technically you're exempt if there are armed robbers, since in this case you still have the ability to get the object back, that's part of your responsibility as a Shomer Sachar to try to pursue this case. And Rava Amar Echadze Ve'echadze Osei Modin Ve'inonish. But Rava says, whether you're an unpaid watchman or you're a paid watchman, either way, you have to work to get this object back, and you can't just make an oath and get off the hook. So we say, Lema Pliga Ader Avuna Bar Oven. Maybe Rava's statement that both a Shomer Chinam and a Shomer Sachar have to work to get the object back, maybe that disagrees with Rav Huna Bar Oven. The Shalach Rav Huna Bar Oven, because Rav Huna Bar Oven sent a statement saying, Nignava Be'ones Behukar Aganav, if an object was stolen by force, and the thief was found, then im shomer chinam hu ratza osi modin ratza nishba, if the person is an unpaid watchman, then if he wants, he can make a shvua, or he can work to get the object back from the thief. But im shomer sachar hu osi modin veinu nishba, if he's a paid watchman, then he has to work to get the object back, and he can't just make an oath. So that statement, which differentiates between a Shomer Sachar and a Shomer Chinam, is exactly like Abaye. It's against Rava. So maybe Rava's statement disagrees with Rav Huna Bar Oven. So Amar Lecha Rava, Rava would respond and say, Hacha b'mayaskinan kigon shekadam v'nishba. The case where Rav Huna Bar Oven is saying that a Shomer Chinam, if he wants, could just make an oath, and he doesn't have to work to get the object back, which is against Rava, that's assuming that he already went ahead and made the oath. So if he already went ahead and made the oath, that's when we'll allow him to just get by with the oath, or he could still work if he wants to get the object back. But if the Shomer Chinam had not gone ahead and made this oath unexpectedly, then we'd require him to work to get the object back from the thief. That's what Rava would say. But says the Gemara, "Baharatza osi modin, ratza nishba kamar." How could you tell me that Rav Huna Bar Oven's case is a case where you jumped ahead and made a shvua if it says that if you want, you could deal to get the object back, or you can make a shvua? It sounds like you haven't yet made an oath, because if you had, the Gemara wouldn't say ratza nishba, that you can make an oath if you want. So says Rava, no, you have to read it slightly differently. Hachi kamar, ratza shomer chinam omed b'shvua, so ratza osim odin. When it says, if you want, you can make an oath, what that really means is, if you want, the unpaid watchman could hold on to his oath. He could retain his oath. He could stand by the oath that he already made, or he could do whatever he can to get this object back from the thief. So Rava would say, I don't disagree with Rav Huna Bar Oven, because Rav Huna Bar Oven only said that an unpaid watchman could make an oath if he already jumped ahead and made an oath, then he could stand by that oath. Otherwise, if he had not yet made this oath, then he would have no choice but to work to try to get this object back from the thief. Now Rabba Zuta Ba'ilahachi, Rabba Zuta taught the statement as follows, that Ningaba Ba'ones, V'hichzir Gana V'beis Shomer. Let's say the object was stolen by force, by armed robbers, and then the thief returned the object to the house of the watchman, umeita bipshia, and then the object, and then the animal, let's say, died sort of through negligence. What would be the din in such a case? Mahu. Miyamrinan kema de nignava ba'ones kal yalesh miraso. Do we say that since the object was stolen by force, which both the shomer chinam, an unpaid watchman, and a shomer sachar, a paid watchman, would be exempt for, do we say that that ends the obligations of the shomer and they're no longer required to watch the object? Odilma came in the hadra hajmeres lishmiraso. Or do we say that since the thief returned the object to the house of the shomer, then the obligation to watch the object returns as well? And since the animal died bipshia, since the animal died through negligence, then the watchman would become obligated again in the Shmira, and they'd be obligated for the damage that occurred to the animal. And the Gemara says, Teku, another question that we have to leave over for Eliyahu HaNavi. So according to Rabba Zuta, it's unclear what would happen if somebody stole the object by force and then returned it and it died through negligence. Would that restore your obligation to watch the animal? So maybe let's just try to finish up with the Mishnah. Not such a difficult Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Heichan Pigdoni Amar Lo Avad. Let's say a person asks, where is the deposit? Where is the object that I gave you? And he says, the object was lost. Mashbiachani Ba'amar Ami. So the person making the claim says, make an oath. And the person who had this claim made against him said, I swear that the object was stolen. Va'edim Me'edim Oto Sha'achalo. And there are witnesses testifying that this person actually used the object, consumed it in some way, it wasn't really lost, then Mishalem Keren, he would have to pay only principal because he never claimed that the object was stolen, so he wouldn't have to pay kefel. Since he just claimed the object was lost, he'd have to pay for the principal. Now, Hoda Me'asmo, if he admits on his own right that he used the object, then Mishalem Keren B'chol Mishu Ashram, he'd have to pay the principal an extra fifth, and he'd have to bring a korban ashram. Heichan Pigdoni Amar Lo Nignav, if the person claims, where is my object, where is the deposit I gave you, and the person responds and said it was stolen, Mashbiach Ani Ba'amar Amen, and the person says, make an oath to me that the object was stolen, and the person who has this claim posed against him makes such an oath, Ve'aidim Me'idim Oto Shiginavo, and there are witnesses testifying that this person actually stole the object, Mishalem Tashlume Kefel, he'd be obligated to pay a double payment, because he claimed that the object was stolen. Hoda Me'atzmo Mishalem Keren B'chomesh Ba'ashlam. If he concedes on his own right, he would have to pay principal, he'd have to pay an extra fifth, and he'd have to bring a korban ashram. So those are the two cases in the Mishnah of one who makes a claim that the object was lost and one who makes a claim that the object was stolen. Now, hagozel es aviv, v'nish belo umes, if a person steals from his father and he makes an oath that he stole from him, and then the father dies, hareza mishalim karen v'chomesh v'asham levanov ola echav. Then, since the father already died, the son who stole from him would have to pay the principal and the fifth, and the Mishnah also says v'asham, but since an asham is a korban, it doesn't really make sense to pay that, so maybe you could take this word out, or it means you just have to bring an asham, but you'd have to pay the principal and the extra fifth, either levanov, to the children of the person who died, o le'echav, or to the brothers of the person who died. Im eino rotze, o she'en lo, if the person doesn't want to pay back the theft that he stole from the father, or he doesn't have the ability to pay it back because he barely has any property, then love, he can take out a loan, ubalechov ba'in v'nifran. He can take out a loan, and then the creditors who give him this loan can come back to the estate of the father, and they can collect payment from the estate, because the son is partially responsible, since he was supposed to return it to the estate, but he had to hold on to the property because he couldn't support himself without it. In a similar way, the Mishnah says, "Ha'omer livno konim e'atanen emishali imeis yirashenu." If a father tells his son, "I'm making a neder that you can't benefit from any of my property," then, in the event that the father dies, the son can still inherit the father, because we assume when a person makes a neder that his son can't get any hana from his possessions, that only means while he's alive. It does not mean once he passes away. But b'chayav b'moso, if he specifies that the son cannot get benefit from his property, neither when he's living nor after he passes away, he may slow yirashenu. Then, in such a case, if the father dies, the son cannot inherit the father because he's not allowed to derive benefit from his estate even after he passes away. V'yachzir levanov ole'echav, anything which he has, which belongs to the father, has to be returned either to the father's children, other than himself, or to the father's siblings, if the father doesn't have children, or the siblings stand to inherit from the father, since this person can't get any benefit from the estate. And if this person has no ability to support himself, and he needs the property from which he's not really technically allowed to benefit, then love, he should borrow, and he should use property from the creditors, not from the estate, since he can't get benefit from the estate, ubalechov ban v'nifrayin, and then the creditors who are allowed to benefit from the estate of the father, they can come and collect payment from the estate of the father, since this child has no ability to pay them back. So that's essentially the Mishnah, and the Gemara will continue on with discussion of all these cases. Okay, Yashar Koach, we'll hold it over here.